Fans, perfect timing. My guest here, Larry Whitaker, came in. Hey, take a seat, man. Take a seat.
Oh, there.
Hello. So this is my good friend Larry Whitaker. Larry has been in the business for longer than I have. Let's just put it that way.
Not that much longer.
Yeah, right. But tonight what I wanted to do, Larry, is talk about this new course that we're going to have, Modeling for Animators. For the students' sake, like for my sake, actually, I've always been pigeonholed as an animator, and I've always wanted to sort of branch out and learn different things like rigging, modeling, lighting, you know, because for me to do my own short film, I have to kind of grasp in everybody that I can, yeah, because there's no way I can do it all myself, right? But just to even know how to model organic things or non-organic things to help me set up shots, I think will be absolutely priceless for me personally. And I know for a lot of the animators in iAnimate, you know, because we've all sort of been concentrating on animation and not really anything else. So I think this is going to be fantastic. Larry showed me the curriculum today, and it is just amazing. It's super exciting. I'm definitely going to take the class anyway, so I'll be in the background going taking notes, you know. But I think this is going to be great. So it's going to be another 14-week workshop, but it's going to be structured a little bit differently. We're going to have 12 full weeks of demos, right?
And then 11, and some review. Some of the things that I'm going to ask you guys to model will take longer than 1 week, so we're going to see how it goes. And since this is the first modeling class that I've taught, having modeled a lot on my own, in fact, if you've taken a look at have you seen any of the new props that are out there?
All the props that are in the actual prop section is all done by Larry Whitaker. How did that whole thing come about? Like, you basically modeled the whole house,
yeah,
right?
It's been a short film I've been working on for a long time, and I modeled a Cape Cod-style home and did all of the props and everything on the inside. So I modeled the house and couch and chairs and tables, everything in there. There's plants in there. Modeled the characters. We're rigging some new characters right now.
Right. Yeah, I told them about Jupiter the dog.
Yeah.
But we're also going to have a baby.
There's going to be a baby, and there's an alien, and
Mom and Dad.
We may mod those.
Yeah, we might mod Jane,
right,
know, and then see what we can do about the dog,
right,
too. That'd be great.
Yeah.
But, so it's going to be a very exciting short film that hopefully we're going to start, you know, maybe not next block, but the block after.
Yeah.
You know, we can actually animate on Larry Whitaker's shorts. I think this is going to be awesome because it's probably going to be like 7 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, 7 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
There's three main characters and four minor characters.
Right,
so
right.
It's a full-blown short, a lot of pantomime, but there's dialogue in it too.
Right, right. Very character-driven.
Yeah.
We actually recorded the dialogue right here in my little studio, which was great. We had Georgina
Marie
as the mom and the announcer and the baby and, you know, some extra little kind of alien baby stuff.
Yep.
It's really funny. I think this is going to be like a really great little short that we'll have my animators working on. This is going to be cool. Well, let's talk about your background, Larry, because you've been in the business for a long time, but how did you get into animation?
Well, I'm from Oklahoma originally, and I started drawing, gosh, my parents said ever since they could remember, but definitely picked up the pencils by the time I was 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was a fireman, but he did Western art bronze on the side, so there was art in the family. So I was supported all along, and when I got to be about 12 years old, I knew I wanted to work in film and probably cartoon animation, and then I made the leap, of course, when I was in high school and found CalArts, mm-hmm, which at the time was considered the Disney School of Animation. So my second and third year of college, I went to CalArts, and from there I was hired by Warner Brothers and Disney actually on the same day.
Oh, wow.
So I had to make a choice. So
between Disney and Warner Brothers.
Yeah, so I decided I would take both jobs. So the Warner Brothers job started first. I worked on Tiny Toons as one of the animators doing character layout on Tiny Toons. And then I went over to feature animation.
Now, like for us, like, you know, CG guys, what is character layout?
Character layout is like doing the main poses.
Like the golden poses.
It's the golden poses. It's a lot of that's done in storyboard today, but we would actually do breakdowns and even some charts. So it was just one half step away when we were doing it on Tiny Toons,
right,
away from doing a Looney Tunes cartoon.
That's awesome.
So we did a lot of drawing.
But even Chuck Jones would probably do like the key poses, right?
Yeah. He did what Chuck Jones did was called character layout.
Right,
exactly.
That's awesome because it gives like the animators something really solid. to go from, you know, so
it's like a roadmap
away, like, you know, like with any old Willy Nilly poses here.
Right.
There. That's cool. And then from there?
From there, I went to Disney Features. I interned under Andreas Deja.
Yeah.
Was invited to stay, but I went back to Warner Brothers. I was working with Spielberg at the time.
Now, what did you work on with Andreas?
I was there during Prince and the Pauper.
Oh, wow.
So, in fact, I did scratch track for, there was an interstitial piece of Prince and the Pauper that I did a scratch track with Mickey for. Yeah, Wayne Allwine. And they couldn't tell who was Wayne and who wasn't. So they say.
That's
but I worked on that, and I worked again. I worked at Disney several times, but throughout my career. But I went back to Warner Brothers, and from there I went on to work with Dale Baer at Baer Animation. And Dale is an old Disney guy. Dale's still there.
And he actually worked with us on Chicken Little. That was like his first CG stint, and he did awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, he just transferred over beautifully into CG.
He told me he really loved doing it.
Yeah. No, he did a lot of. Chicken Little's dad, you know, I was like, man, awesome, you know.
Yeah.
We always talk about like how people transfer from 2D to CG, but he transferred over really well because I think he just knew all the breakdowns and in betweens. Like, did he buff in his own breakdowns and in betweens?
You know, I'm not sure if he. I'm guessing. Well, when I animate in CG, I thumbnail.
Right,
I do
right.
little thumbnails for myself.
Right.
And then I'll paste them on my. Computer and I'll sit there and just make sure I get my poses right, and that's a faster way, at least for me, to work. And a lot of CG animators don't draw, so they have different methods, but I still think traditionally.
And that's probably what he was doing as well.
Oh, yeah,
he was probably just drawing them out like his little thumbnails. Yeah, because,
you
could totally tell his but he, even like his posing, like it felt traditional, you know. It felt
his
like,
timing is so good.
Yeah. Even on one look, you know, it was great.
Now, Dale started back at Disney in 19... Well, let's just put it this way. The year that I was born, Dale was working at Disney. Sorry, Dale.
That's awesome.
And if you've ever seen any of the old classic commercials from the 70s, you'll recognize his work from Tony the Tiger and Kellogg's commercials.
Oh, wow.
And all that stuff. So, but he had his own studio, Baer Animation, and they were doing Prince and the Pauper. So when I started work for Dale, they were just finishing very, very tail end of Prince and the Pauper. When I was at Disney, it was the very beginning, storyboards. So I worked with Dale on some Tom and Jerry projects and several commercials, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, and Charlie Tuna commercials and things like that. I did a little bit of Disney work while I was there for the theme parks while I was working for Dale, did some Goofy animation.
Awesome.
And then from there, I worked on The Sworn Princess with Rick Rich.
Got it.
Rick was an old Disney director. He was not an animator. He was not an artist.
All right.
But he'd been there. I think he was a couple of pictures before The Black Cauldron, but he was on The Black Cauldron.
Oh, okay.
And we did Sworn Princess there. And from Rich Animation, wrapped up there and went to Warner Brothers Features, and I was there with Space Jam and Quest for Camelot and development through Iron Giant.
Space Jam, now that was like the 2D and live action.
A lot of green screen work.
Plates, right? Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Now, was that like a difficult process?
Because I worked for Dale and Dale's specialty, he did 20 minutes at his studio years ago if you framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, Roger Rabbit.
So his specialty, everybody would come to him to do live action animated projects that had to be blended together, and he was a master at it.
So
I got a little bit of that.
So he knew like animating on ones perfectly then, you know?
Yeah.
Because I always found like some 2D guys transferring over to CG, like the timing would kind of go a bit mushy because they would be timing for twos instead of timing for ones.
Like my stuff.
So mushy.
But I would use both. I would use twos and ones, and I think Dale, because he'd been doing the live action so much, he really understood the timing. I mean, I know that there are times when he animates things on ones and twos.
Yeah.
So it just depends. I think Andreas had a real kind of way of working where he almost always wanted everything to be on ones.
Got it.
I know that it wasn't
Richard
always,
Williams,
but yeah, like Richard Williams.
Yeah.
So, but you've got to place those drawings, those poses in the right place to make it work. But when you're working with live action, you have no choice. It has to be.
Otherwise, it would stroll.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then, so after Space Jam,
I went to DreamQuest Images, which was Disney, and I worked as an animation supervisor on Mighty Joe Young, which was the first creature feature that had been done with Maya.
Oh, wow.
Maya was in beta testing, and Disney was a lighthouse company, and we were there, you know, making a show with beta software. I would never do that again. You've never got to get something done on schedule, don't use beta software.
Right, yeah.
But there were a lot of bugs and things, but we saw the potential and, you know, the proof's in the pudding. The paint came out looking great.
Yeah, awesome. No, that show looked really amazing. I think we were still on Soft Image when you guys were doing Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah, a lot of the crew there at DreamQuest Images was still using Soft Image.
Yeah.
So, and Lightwave, I think they were also using Lightwave.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that show is we had to match what Rick Baker was doing. Rick Baker, if you don't know, he's a very, very accomplished creature feature guy and makeup artist, Oscar award winning. He did Werewolf in London, mm-hmm. American Werewolf in London, and he did the fat suit for The Nutty Professor.
Right.
But he did the ape costume in Mighty Joe Young, and we used his costume as the basis. So we had to make sure our digital ape matched the costume character. That was probably the last time they blended something like that, because I know when Peter Jackson did King Kong, that was all digital.
Yes, right.
So we were kind of stair-stepping into that age.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of shots in Maya Jo Young that was like, whoa, that looks like a real ape, you know, when he's like howling along.
When he's really running, that's digital.
Oh, yeah. Man, that looks
because the suit couldn't do it. They had a big treadmill and tried to get the guy to do it. He fell off. Almost wrecked it, you know, a $10,000 mask or however much that cost, because they had all kinds of servos and radio controls inside this mask.
Oh my God.
But it's crazy.
Put him on 60.
What? Yeah. So from there, I had my own studio for 4 years. Most of the work I did was for Disney. We also did some stuff for Big Idea at the time, Larry Boy, The Cartoon Adventures, which is a VeggieTales spinoff.
We
did a big chunk of the Tigger movie, and we did some of Lion King 1.5. A lot of 2D, almost all 2D. A little bit of CG, and developed some you know, proprietary projects.
That's amazing. So how did you get into modeling? I mean, like, you've been animating for so long. I mean, what made you, like, sort of kind of go, oh, yeah, I want to be a model?
Well, I'm not a modeler per se that I'm doing it every day, but, you know, I've got my own film projects on the side that I want to do, and, you know, if I'm doing a character, it's like, oh, I wish I had a candlestick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how the heck do I make a candlestick? And so I had a student of mine from years ago who was a professional sculptor who went into modeling. That's Luis Labrador. He's at Disney Features now, but he was at Gentle Giant for years, which is a toy company, and then went to DreamWorks for many years. He was there at the same time you were there.
Yeah.
And we kind of started trading secrets, so to speak, back and forth. He helped me with modeling, and I helped him with animation, and we're still good friends to this day. So I loved to sculpt when I was younger, did my own maquettes. My dad was a sculptor, so I thought, you know, I want to learn how to do this on the computer. So, and for doing the kind of projects that I've got lined up for this course, it's going to be fun, easy stuff at first, and then we're going to talk about how to make things more and more complex. We're not going to get to the point where we're going to model a human body,
right.
But we're going to start with the basics so that you know where the tools are and how to use them, how to manipulate them. So when you've got a project of your own that you want to do and you've got some simple props, you can do it yourself if you want to.
I mean, that's always been my problem. It's like, I don't know where to go. Like, you know, from here, there's a sphere or there's like a polygon, like, you know, to make a rectangle. And you got that and you're like, all right, well, I'll put like four cubes together and put a... Yeah, there you go, it's a table, you know. I don't know how to make anything decent, you know, something that I can design it myself, you know. So I think this will be fantastic. So any questions there? Oh, Perry, as an animator, what are the main benefits to learning aspects of modeling?
I would say understanding your character, and you get used to over time looking at the mesh and realizing... And what this will do for you over time is you'll realize if something's not working. For instance, if you're working on a character and you just can't get the expression right, there's something wrong with the skin, you get used to looking at it. I know there's something wrong with the polys there, but I don't know what it is, the flow.
Yeah.
But if you're modeling, you'll understand it.
Right.
But I come from the background as an artist that it's good to have a broad range of knowledge about several different things, and then a deep knowledge of a few things.
Right.
And one of the things that can actually be a benefit to someone knowing modeling as well as animation, also practically, is working.
Right.
You may not work as an animator all the time.
Right.
Maybe they need someone who can model. Maybe they need someone who can do a little modeling and animation. So it'll give you an edge in getting a job.
That's right. That's right.
You know, as a traditional animator, I haven't animated much traditionally in quite a while, but I still do. I direct. I do character design. I do storyboard. Although my specialty is directing animation, I know a lot of these other areas, so I can jump in. So if I get hired on a job, they say, well, gosh, you know five or six things where this other person only knows a couple or maybe only one. We need help in these other areas. It makes you more marketable as an artist.
I mean, I was saying, like, even as a director, you could kind of tell them.
Absolutely.
The flow isn't working there, or, like, I know we can make this more organic looking, like, and you can almost, you know, specify exactly what they need to do rather than, I don't know, just tweak that thing there, you know.
Well, you know, when I worked on Mighty Joe Young, that's kind of how I felt at the beginning, because I was just beginning to learn Maya, and computer animation was almost completely alien to me. Mm-hmm. I'd worked with a few of the people that were there at Warner Brothers who were going to go work on Iron Giant, and I was there just for a little while where Brad Bird was just transitioning in, but I was working with the digital animators because they hadn't animated much of anything that was organic, so they didn't understand how things moved or how it should feel, or acting wasn't real strong.
Right.
So I worked with them, and I took those skills and went to DreamQuest Images, which was a division of Disney,
right.
And I helped the animators start to think like an actor and think,
yeah.
You know, when they're animating, about how the character's feeling and what's motivating them.
Yeah.
But there was an aspect, at least for the first third of the time that I was there, where someone would say, well, we can't do that. Well, I just had to go, okay, I guess you can't.
Right.
But...
Well, you had a feeling.
But
like
I had a feeling that you could. Yeah. So after I started understanding a little better and talking to, you know, the technical director, he and I became good friends at the time, and it's like, you know what, you can do that.
Yeah,
it also helps to keep you from getting the wool pulled over your eyes.
That's
so you're able to go, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
It's not that limiting. You can fix this, or if it's not working. But if you don't have that knowledge of rudimentary sculpture and modeling, you know, it's going to limit you to a degree because you only have a certain knowledge of just one main thing. So learning these other areas will kind of expand your mind. It'll help you understand how things are built, and also can give you an edge, as I said before, as a professional.
And the other good thing about this course is you could probably take it alongside of your animation workshop.
Yeah.
You know, we just have to kind of organize the times, you know, see what works with your schedule and what works with their schedule. But I think... you know, I always like to take a break whenever I, you know, feel like I'm becoming blind to my own stuff, you know. Like, I go take a break, you know, have lunch, you know, go see some friends, whatever, come back and have a look at my shot, you know. But this way you can actually work on your shot, maybe do some modeling, and then go back to your animation, like, with a fresh eye, you know. And you'd be like, oh, wow, I can, you know, my eyes have had a break there, like, from actually looking at my own curves or my own kind of acting or whatever,
yeah.
You know.
Modeling is very... therapeutic in a way. It's
that's
calming. You just sit
yeah.
down and kind of play around. I was modeling there's a stasis tube, an alien kind of capsule that's in the short, and I modeled that. Probably took me about 3 hours to do it, maybe 3.5 hours, and just kind of zone out and enjoyed it. And then I went back to the, you know, the other stuff I had to do, the drawing side
yeah.
of it. So it's kind of using a different part of the brain in a way.
Yeah. Now, you know, I mean, obviously you're going to be directing this short, but you've also got other projects that we're not going to mention, but, you know, very exciting stuff that I really can't
yeah.
wait to
well, you've
see
got,
how it goes, you know?
We've got two feature films we want to do. One of them is fully developed. Howard Kazanjian's come on board to help move the project forward. Howard was the producer of Raiders of the Lost Ark and Return of the Jedi and Demolition Man. And the script's been written. We've got a lot of character development done, and we're looking forward to try to moving that into full-blown, you know, storyboard and production.
It's amazing. That's fantastic. Very exciting times ahead, you know, for Ghost Train Productions.
Ghost
right?
Train Pictures.
Ghost Train Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really cool.
You know, you can actually see, if you want to check out some of the artwork, you can go on Facebook and look up Ghost Train Pictures, and we've pasted a bunch of right. artwork and development work up there. A lot of the short developments up there. There's a lot more coming. I'm kind of holding on to a stash of it till I get more, but we've got our art director, who is working on it, Bill Deli, is painting up the character textures and
mm-hmm.
doing some character illustrations. And some of his work's up there. It's amazing.
Well, we might actually be starting like a little kind of Kickstarter maybe for
yeah.
for the short.
Yeah. thinking about 3 months from now, 3 to 4 months from now, we're thinking of doing a Kickstarter to help us close the gap on getting some of the post done on the short and some of the music. It's going to be fully, you know, it's going to be fully composed music. We're not going to use canned music. It's going to be original.
Yeah, they got original everything else, so you might as well get everything original. It's really cool. Awesome stuff. So we'll start this modeling course May 6th, right? And we'll go for 11 weeks full with demos, and then 3 weeks will be sort of like a recap, you know, reviews, you know, take a look at like some of the props that everybody's been making, and then we'll kind of go through it. But we want to see like how this one goes, because I have a feeling it's going to be very popular, and if it's popular enough, then we'll ask, you know, if you know any other modelers that you can kind of share the curriculum with, you know, and then help, you know, kind of get some more modeling out there, because it's something that I've always wanted to do, but never really had the right communicator. You know, I know a lot of modelers, but for some reason they don't come across as a good communicator. Yeah. You obviously do.
I've got a lot of, you know, teaching experience. I've taught at CalArts in the past, and there was a school, Associates in Art, Mark Westermo, I don't know if you know Mark was, he was an illustrator, famous illustrator, had his school for a while, I taught there for 5 years, and I've come in at CSUN, and I taught the interns at Warner Brothers, I've had quite a bit of experience teaching.
That's right.
So it depends on, you know, who you're working with, but it's true, some people are good at, you know, at art and communicating how they do it, and some people are just real focused and more quiet. And
you need
someone who's got both of those skills.
Exactly. I mean, Larry Vasquez was actually asking me there today. He's like, "Hey, why don't you ask you know, some of the Disney animators, like, if they would do some lectures?" And I was like, "Yeah, there is a few people that would ask to do lectures, but honestly, like, a lot of the great animators, like, they're not very good communicators, you know."
Not everybody, but there's some very quiet.
Like Ruben Aquino is so quiet. Like, he'd be like, "What? What was that? Yeah, I can't hear you." You know, but yeah. So I'd love to try and see if we can get a hold of some of these guys again to do some 2D lectures. Even yourself, like, you know, to do some kind of,
what
was that?
It's like 2D.
2D, like the old primitive pencil.
Although you mean the stuff you're doing in Europe now?
You might have to use one of these kind of newfangled pencils. You might have to use one of those on the screen, you know, so we can actually see the drawings. Should be fun. Richard says, is modeling course going to be more aimed towards props and set stuff, or a mixture of different types of modeling?
Different types. We're not going to get into full-blown characters. It's going to mostly be props and some set pieces, and then I've got one kind of organic toy, like a teddy bear that we're going to do, and then maybe modeling. There's a tree without leaves, and we're going to I'm thinking about tacking on toward the end, depending on how fast everybody's, you know, catching up, maybe modeling a human eye.
Right. I mean, here's the thing.
Cartoon.
I looked at the curriculum, and there's one assignment per week, you know, so you've got to kind of keep up. There's not going to be, like, a lot of review time, you know, in the beginning, because we want to try and get all the information to you guys. And it's going to be in this GoToWebinar format. So after Larry's finished with the webinar, I will sit here, and then I will convert it to a QuickTime. So it won't be, it'll be sort of downloadable as a QuickTime for you guys. So you'll be able to scrub through it, so you don't have to actually take notes as you're watching it. And so I'll get the QuickTime like the day after, just like my JRA demos. Okay, so this will be very fun, I think. And very fortunate that we're actually getting Larry's time to do this, because I think it's going to be a fantastic course. Any other questions? Here we go, Larry. One of the things I like about being able to model for my scenes is that the detail in the assets helps me keep in mind mindset for my animation. It helps keep in character, so to speak. Larry actually runs the site, and he does some modeling too. You know, he does a lot of modeling, like, in his day job as well. But I think that's right. I mean, once you kind of like model like a sort of environment for your character to sort of sit in, it sort of kind of helps ground your character rather than, you know, doing something, you know, primitive with spheres and you know, rectangles and whatnot. You know?
Yeah, gives it an environment.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, as an animator, if you really want to show off your stuff, and you're like, "Gosh, I wish I had a hammer."
Yeah.
You got to try to find a hammer. Maybe the model isn't what you want, and you really, "God, I wanted a Thor's hammer."
Right.
You know, that's really quite easy to model.
Yeah.
As long as you don't want to get into the details of wrapping the string around it, which you could do.
Yeah.
But if you just wanted to have that prop and be able to animate it, you know, now you can. Right, after you take this course, you'll be able to do something like that pretty quickly.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. Excellent stuff. So now, I mean, so you went to Cal Arts. I mean, who were like some of the names in your
list? Joe Ramft was one of my teachers. Chris Buck.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm trying to think who else. Bob Winquist, who worked in live action and animation. He worked at the theme parks as one of the designers there. I was in school with Mark Andrews, who was a good friend of mine at the time. He's moved up at Pixar now. He won some little award. What was it called? An Oscar, I think it is.
Yeah.
For Brave. And his brother.
That guy, yeah.
And his brother, Brian Andrews, who's a storyboard artist. He's worked on several things. He worked on Iron Man as a board artist. And he was on Samurai Jack. Mm. Dave Krantz was another person who was class.
He actually worked on Dinosaur.
That's right.
Sort of like the illustrator and character designer. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, his stuff was unbelievable. You know, have you ever seen like the art of Dinosaur? I didn't, you know, like the movie per se, but I worked on it, but I didn't like it. You know, the drawings that he did like had so much weight.
Dinosaurs are his thing.
Yeah, man, unbelievable. Does he do lectures on dinosaurs?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, he was kind of like one of those dark, mysterious figures, you know, that you kind of go, oh, I'm not sure if he's approachable. You know, but his drawings were amazing, really unbelievable.
And James Lopez was in my class, and Tom Owens.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty small class. There was, I think, 350 applicants that year, and only 27 of us got in.
That's cool. Chris McCormick says, a modeling workshop sounds great, but not all animators have a great knowledge of layout and scene composition.
The cool thing about having your set is you can think about the cinematography and go, where do I want to put my camera?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas if you're drawing it, you got to draw it.
Right.
But at least when you've got a set there, you can move your camera you want, and it's like, gosh, well, that plant's in the way. Well, just slide the plant over.
Right.
You don't have to redraw it. Just move it.
Yeah.
So I do think that is something that could go, definitely would go well and go in tandem.
That'd be great. Thanks for that, Chris. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a lot of mysterious buttons that most animators just don't touch that. I don't know what it does.
Right.
So
I mean, that's me. Like when it comes to I'm like, I know like four buttons that I use all the time and nothing else. I'm like, I wouldn't venture over there. It's like,
no man's land.
Crazy words, you know. Like, I don't think some of those words are in the dictionary, you know. I think they're made up from Maya, you know. Did you go see Jurassic Park? How was it?
It's great.
Yeah?
Makes a big difference seeing it on the big screen.
In 3D?
It's the first time my son has seen it. You know, we saw it in IMAX.
Yeah.
3D looked good, but it wasn't made for 3D. It wasn't shot in 3D the way that Avatar was.
No.
So, I mean, it wasn't as good as Avatar's 3D because it had a special camera that was built for that show.
But how old is your son?
He is 13.
Wow. So, he wouldn't have seen the original, of course, on big screen.
No, he's only seen it on the medium-sized screen.
Yeah.
You can't say small screen.
Yeah, right.
Smaller.
Yeah. So what did he think?
He loved it.
Yeah. 13, of course he would have. That's amazing. So, like, the shots, like the T-Rex, like, chasing the car.
It looked great.
In 3D?
Yeah. It looked good.
Does it give you a more intense feel? Like, does it get you really in there?
You know, When I sit down and watch decent 3D, because not all of it's good, this was good.
Right.
You get to the point where you forget that it's there, but it does immerse you a little bit more.
Because
there are times when I was watching, you're like, whoa, boy, that really was right there. And the rest of the time, you're so focused on the story.
Right.
If it's like this at you all the time,
that's a bit too gimmicky.
You're like, whoa, wait a minute, too gimmicky.
Right. Gotcha. Richard says, I haven't done any modeling since Maya 5. So it'd be a cool class to take since Maya 2013 is a lot different than Maya 5. And actually, this course will be a lot cheaper than our original one. It'll probably be about $1,000 for the 14 weeks. But because it's so cheap, we're probably going to put in like a few more students in there to make it worth Larry's time and our time to get it in there. All right? So,
and I'll probably be using a combination of Maya 11, 12 and 13, because I'm using 11 most of the time, but I've just started using 13.
Right.
So I'll probably stair step into it, because I know the tools are a little different in the two.
Right.
They've renamed a couple of things, but it's not major, they're minor.
It's just minor stuff, right? Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Richard. Chris, the 3D in Jurassic Park was painful. Trying to look at anything out of focus really hurt my
eyes. That's true. But did you see it in IMAX? Because it will make a big difference in, depending on the film print. There were a few times where things were out of focus, but most of the time, at least on the digital, you know, it was digitally projected, at least the theater that we went to was pretty crisp.
Was that the, like, the far back or, like,
close? I'm in the middle of the, oh, you mean the blurry stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
It was in the back. The stuff that was right up close was pretty crisp.
Yeah.
I've seen 3D films that give me a headache before.
Yeah.
And this wasn't.
You'll never come out of a 3D movie and go, wow, my eyes feel awesome. You'll never do that. I mean, myself and the wife, like, because we wear glasses, to put glasses over glasses, it's kind of painful for us anyway, like just literally on your nose, you know? So
wait till they perfect just 3D projection. You don't have to wear glasses.
Right. They
they're already working on it.
They've already got it.
They've already got it.
I mean,
it's just not. It's not.
I mean, Jack has got
not
this,
cheap enough to sell.
Yeah, right. I mean, Jack's got this little DS, the 3DS, you know, and you can put it on 3D, and it's like, the heck, it's 3D without the glasses, you know. I mean, it's full depth, you know. I'm like, they can't be that far away from getting up there on the
screen. I remember when right out of school. From CalArts in 1990, I went to a trade show and saw HD television, and it was 7-8 years later before it was on the market.
Like for $50,000 a TV.
It was
like,
the TV was as big as your wall here,
yeah.
But you'd have to buy the one television for like $40,000 or something like that. It was crazy expensive.
I remember looking, I mean, this is like, well, it must be like 10 years, like looking at plasmas or whatever, and they were like $20,000, like for a Sony or Panasonic or something, you know. And now look at them, like you go to Costco, you could pick one for $1,000.
Yep. That's or
like
less.
50 inches.
Yeah, you get a special, you get it for $750. It's crazy. But what's going to happen is that they've already got things they're working on. I don't know what the technology is, but it's 3D that you just can sit down and watch from several angles, and it's you don't have to have glasses. It looks dimensional.
That's cool.
So when it's going to come out on the market, I don't know.
Right. Cool. Any questions, you guys? Come on. I thought you guys would have like a ton of questions for Larry here. Richard says, is the class going to be set up so that we can quickly model a prop without using a lot of time, especially if we are doing animation? I would say like in the beginning, it's kind of slow going because you're going to be like, oh, what tool was that again? Going back to the video, watching a little bit, and then going back to modeling. And then you'll start to get used
you can,
to the
Yeah, you can right? pick up, you know, at one point, I'm going to have you guys model a couch all out of one shape, not breaking it up into pieces. And I'll show you how to do that pretty quickly. And then it's going to be a little more in-depth as we go, how to do something that's a little more ornate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just hoping to get out of this how to quickly build simple props by the time this course is through, you will definitely get that mm-hmm. out of this course plus.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're at the point where, like, I really want to have this prop, I wish it was a little special.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just kind of a shaped block.
Yeah.
You'll be able to do something with it. We'll talk about how you use orthographic drawings, which you can create on your own. You'll probably find some reference in just online or take photographs from as orthographic a view as you can, use that as reference.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to have a little more freedom. And that's, you know, that's something else about having more than one skill in this area as an animator gives you more freedom.
Right.
You're able to do things that you don't have to lean on someone else as much to do it because you've got some of the skill sets on your own.
Right. Javier says, how do you compare online education versus a place like CalArts? What are the pros and the cons of like a brick and mortar school versus like an online school?
Well, the pros would be that often students would pull me aside and ask me personal questions, but of course you can send me emails or you can chat and do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you have a question immediately, of course a lot of the time I'm teaching people that are traditional or quasi-traditional, so I might draw over their drawing right there physically.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you know, there's the human interaction which you can't ever substitute.
Right.
But other than that, you'll still get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
Online.
I mean, for me, like
I would teach the same way.
If I were,
you know, if you were right there in front of me, I'd be teaching the same way.
Right. I mean, the big pro for me for an online class is that it's recorded. You know,
it's true.
You don't have to take notes. You don't have to sit there and go, what did he just say there? You know, like a lecture, like you have to sit there and take notes. It's not going to be recorded on a video camera, you know, whereas this is all recorded, you know, real time, so that
it's true.
You can actually watch it like whenever you want.
Yeah. Occasionally I've done a class that's been recorded, but most of the time that's not the case because you have to set it up.
Yeah. So I think that's the main thing for me.
If you want to see some of the work that I've done, my director's reel is up on LarryWhitakerProductions.com, and that's WHITAKER, LarryWhitakerProductions.com. That's my director's reel, which has a lot of my animation in it, and then some of the shots are shots that I directed, didn't necessarily animate, but I've done 3D and 2D both, so it's a blend of things. So the shots that are on there of Mighty Joe Young are not shots that I've animated, but they're... Yeah, Wincy. I lost one when he came over on the boat.
Aww. Whitaker.
Productions.com. And there's a TV series I directed last year that's playing in Europe and Canada called Mia and Me. You can find clips of that online. I directed 20 out of 22 episodes, I think, or 26 episodes. I can't remember.
Paul says, will the class include some discussion on proper edge flow and begin to develop thinking for texture in the future?
It will have a little bit of that toward the end, just a little bit of that.
Right.
But mostly this is going to be hard-bodied stuff, even though we're going to do probably a tree and a toy animal. It's going to be simple modeling. The more complex with the polyflow, that's really hard stuff. So I would start that,
like in the next
second,
next one.
Second course.
All right. Good. Thanks, Paul. Okay. That's good. Richard, are we also going to be shown what could go wrong if we don't model right? Example, taking a prop and having it animate, but it falls apart.
Probably. And it'll happen by accident. I'll show you how to take pieces and sew them together and group them together. We'll have to discuss. You know, I'm not sure about maybe adding locators. That's something that I don't rig.
Right,
so
right.
We could probably
we'll get
set something up for that.
For sure. Good questions, Richard. All right. This is great because we really need to kind of organize like the class so that. Like that, we kind of like start off at the beginning, ramp up, and then we get more complex as we go on. And depending on the popularity of it, like maybe we will have like an extra one that we will be doing more organic stuff, like the harder stuff. But maybe it'll be less assignments and more weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. As soon as you start modeling organic characters,
It
takes a lot longer.
Right.
You know, you're not going to have one new assignment every week. If it's one new assignment every week, let's do the ear. Let's do the eye.
Well, exactly. I mean, even, for the animation assignments, like something that you may kind of go, oh, that would just take me like a day or two. Usually we try and give the students like a week or two to actually do like an assignment just so they're getting the hang of it, And you may find that, like you kind of go, oh, man, this is taking longer than we thought. Like we may have to pad it out a little bit, but we'll see how it goes. Like I'm looking forward to giving them a shot. So when you were doing 2D, what was the thing that you found most challenging? Like obviously you could do.
I specialized in broad acting and comic characters. Mm-hmm. So,
like more of the Ward Kimball versus like the
Milt Call.
The Milt Call sort of.
So I've done a lot of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Tom and Jerry, and what always intrigued me is how to use warp frames, you got to triple arms on something.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the way that Victor's rigging the dog character, mm-hmm. Jupiter, he's going to have multiple arms in there.
Oh, cool.
So you can do something where he scrambles and he's got three arms on a frame and two arms on another frame, that kind of thing.
We're hoping
to get that out of the rig. So learning how to master that, and one of the, there's two people, well, three people that I really credit with teaching me on a professional level, and of course my first mentor Andreas Dea, but then I spent more time learning under Dan Haskett and Dale Baer, and Dale Baer especially with how to finesse that animation and get it to work. If I hadn't worked under Dale, he's just
like his sense of timing,
flows, his drawing,
yeah.
his sense of volume, and his timing. He's a real master at what he does.
No, it's, I mean, just watching him, like, do some 2D stuff on the Goofy shorts, you know, and that was cool because...
How to set up your home entertainment system.
Yeah, because he was, like, you know, I mean, they wanted to try and get them animating in Toon Boom, I think it was at the time, Mirage or something, I don't know. But he was actually animating, he was animating digitally, you know, and it's like, this is cool, what the hell, you know? You know, fair play to you for giving it a shot, you know?
I still draw faster on paper. And I've got a Cintiq, I use it all the time.
Yeah. It is. There's something, the separation between, like, the nib, you know, and the glass and the actual software.
Yeah.
It's not so exact, you know?
It's getting better, but it's still not quite there.
I actually found, like, I just got one of those Galaxy Notes, you know, the Galaxy Note phones. And I found that stylus, like, on the screen, is better than the Cintiq.
We're planning on getting this year.
It's for that reason. Really nice. I was like, holy, this is actually nicer than the Cintiq because you can kind of, you know, zoom in on the drawing and then zoom in.
The new Cintiqs are supposed to be really great.
I don't know
if the newest ones are released yet or not.
I don't know. I haven't even looked into it, to be honest. You know? Chris says, what's your view on the recent layoffs at Disney Master 2D animators?
Well, I will tell you that it's, your heart has to be in it to do it. You know, 2D is moving illustration.
Yeah.
And 3D isn't. You can make your 3D look illustrated, but it's not. It's not drawn by a human hand. I love both. But, you know, I know that 2D is really popular in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, the original American art form. 2D animation is.
Right.
It's just a different animal. Now, for me, I've been able to transverse back and forth because I can draw.
Yeah.
I know there, you know, a lot of my friends that work in digital animation can't draw. They don't draw.
Right. Yeah.
So it, you know, there's a special place in my heart for it, and
you
can get away and cheat certain things in an illustration that you can't cheat in CG, because you're dealing with a virtual world world elements, so it's not the same.
Yeah. No. They go to the 2D side of things there, like with Nick and Jerry. You know, Ruben Aquino, like a bunch of those guys, Gad Scooper Schmidt, you know, these guys who, you know, these are the kind of guys that I look up to, you know, saying, oh my God, they're like the rock stars of animation, you know, and to see them being let go was pretty heartbreaking. I was like, oh my God, this is insane, you know, they really are.
You never know what will happen then, you know. I'm a big proponent of, you know, doing your own thing and working with smaller groups and being entrepreneurial, so some of those folks...
They'll do something. Yeah. I'm sure they'll even. They may even go into storyboarding. You know.
Oh, sure. That's an easy transition
from being an animator. Yeah. Richard, I am interested in the program since I can't seem to find a lot of free props on the net, and at the moment I am not confident in my modeling skills and doing my own props without taking a lot of time away from animating. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, same with me, Richard. You know, I'm really kind of. You know, pigeonholed as an animator, so I really don't know how to do any of these sort of prop building things or sets. My good friend Larry Vasquez, you know, really helps me a lot because, you know, he kind of takes like what I've got, like, and I just might have a chair or something a free chair that somebody else has modeled, and I put like
the free models online.
And then, we got like a lot of students doing models and donating them to the Toy Animate, you know. So I might take one of those chairs and put them on there, you know, and then Larry will take the shot and then build a whole set around it. You know? And I come back and be like, whoa!
That's cool.
Even the chair is gone. He's now on a beanbag. You know? It's awesome. So thanks, Larry, for that. But yeah.
There'll be, toward the end, I plan on giving you kind of a free time to design your own props, and then I'll try to help you as long as they're not too complex. I mean, I don't want you to build Mercedes Benz, but I'll
engine and everything.
Yeah, I'll try to help you build if there's a certain kind of chair or a certain small prop you want to build. I can kind of guide you through that a little bit. So
that's cool. So I mean, would you be talking about doing orthographic drawings?
Yeah,
you know, like because that's a really important part of it, right? So what would be the essential things that people would need? You said they probably need Photoshop.
Photoshop. If you've got Photoshop, most people do. You can download Photoshop. It's a free trial for at least 30 days.
Yeah, so. I think you get the student version as well.
Okay.
Through iAnimate.
Yeah, and the great thing about that is you can set your drawings up and make sure that your side view and your front view are lined up. I'll show you orthographic drawings that I've done for the short film that we're working on. There's a baby character, there's an alien, there's all kinds of props. I mean, you've seen that house.
It's unbelievable. Props. And thank you so much again for donating to the props that you have.
Sure.
Because that's, again, very helpful, you know.
Feel free to grab those props.
Well. Thank you. Cool. Yeah, so that's exactly what we're hoping for, Richard, you know, is to get people more self-sufficient, I guess is the word that I would use, you know, like animators, you know, being more self-sufficient for themselves, like being able to do their own props, like for their own animation tests. And it just sort of like puts like the icing on the cake, like when you're doing like a demo reel, you know, because instead of just having like the character there not really interacting with anything, now you've got stuff they can actually interact with.
I've seen that chair before. Everybody uses that free chair online.
Yeah. That's cool. Questions? Richard, thank you for the props. Now I knew who donated them. It's been a lifesaver for my animation. There you go. Exactly, yeah. That's like 2 years in the making or something.
Oh, yeah.
Right there.
That was a lot. Right? Oh, you know what? If you go onto that Facebook page, there's a little movie of the house. It's a little fly-through that has all the props set up in there. You can actually see it.
Yeah. Is that like at the Larry Whitaker production?
No, it's on the Facebook page for Ghost Dream Pictures.
Oh, okay. So Facebook page for Ghost Dream Pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, sweet. Thanks. Richard, so what types of modeling are there that we can learn in this course?
What types? It's all going to be polygonal. I've used NURBS in the past. It's been so long since I've used that. And, you know, eventually if you wanted to become a full-fledged modeler, you're going to want to look into something like ZBrush and Mudbox and those kinds of things. But this is all going to be polygonal. Polygonal for me has always been the easiest and fastest way to model things.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Yeah, I think this guy, the guy who models this stuff, I think he does use ZBrush to get like some of these detailing types.
And a lot of times people will start with polygonal model, and they'll rough out your basic shapes and then bring it into ZBrush and do all of the muscle structures and veins and things
like that.
You know, something I've found that's at least it's true for me, and I've known other people that this has helped them. If you can't, you know, people that can't draw well, they might be able to sculpt really well.
Right.
Because you're actually working with something that's dimensional.
Right.
So if you don't have confidence in your drawing skills, and gosh, I wish I could do that, the modeling will also help you give you confidence there. Because yesterday I was drawing a traditional character. I was trying to get a three-quarter back view, and I was like, I don't know how to, wait a minute. I just sat down and modeled the head in about 30 minutes, just roughly, and spun it around.
There it is.
To fix my drawing. It used to be I'd just have some Sculpey there, and I would sculpt it out and look at it if I didn't have a maquette. So
you can
use it for that as well.
It looked like an action figure or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, because my brother is a goldsmith. He can't draw, like, for peanuts, you know, like, couldn't draw a thing. But, like, he is a really great sculptor, because now he's actually modeling his own designs in some sort of CAD software. I don't know what he's doing. But, like, he showed me, like, some of the rings that he's actually modeling himself. And I was like, man, that's awesome, you know. And, he there's no way he can actually draw. Mm-hmm. Like, his drawing kind of looks like really bad handwriting, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, he can model really well. So, I think there's absolutely a correlation there for sure.
You know why I'm thinking about it? Because we talk about the Kickstarter campaign and the artwork's up there.
Yeah.
Once you get the chance to look at that Facebook page, don't forget to click the like.
Oh, yeah.
Because over the course of the next 3 or 4 months, we want to build up visibility. And I've had a lot of friends do successful Kickstarter campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've got big plans for iAnimate students,
yeah.
And I would love to be in a position where we hire right out of the school eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
So remember to like it, and then if you've got friends that just like entertainment, like film, let them know.
Yeah,
pass that link along.
You have to pass the word on these things, because it's always the ones that sort of have the most popularity that gets the most visibility, right? So it definitely really helps. Like, once we get the Kickstarter started, you know, we'll get it rolling and really kind of, you know, broadcast it, go viral on there, you know. Like, especially, I mean, things like my music video, like, these are things that I'm doing for fun, but eventually I definitely want it to get out there, you know, because we want the bands and the songs to be successful, you know. And, I mean, they're going to be out there anyway because of the feature film that they're going to be attached to, but we own the songs, so we're allowed to kind of do our own things with them, you know. So we want to try and have this whole thing animated you know, I want to try and animate it like over the next like 3 or 4 months, you know, just get it done, you know. And but it looks at it like, I mean, this was just like
how many minutes of animation in them?
About 2.5 minutes. Yeah, but I mean, man, I mean, at the rate I'm going, like I'll get it done like, within 3 months, you know, you know, because it's something that's very clear in my head, you know. So I just have to get in there and do it, you know.
But, animation's easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just drawing the pictures,
and then reuse it from a different angle, you know. Like this crawl or this walk. Yeah, this walk is going to be used like different angles, same walk. You know. That's the beauty about CG.
That's what's great about CG. You don't have to do it again.
You can't do a different angle like in reverse.
Draw a character running toward camera. I really want the camera to be over here.
Really? Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. Well, that was going to be one of my questions was, did you ever have any sort of nightmare cases where you work with directors
Yes. There's one shot, I won't say what film. There's one shot that I worked on 32 field paper like this, and this character's running three-quarter toward camera, and it was all planned out. It was a pan also, so I'm drawing sort of the characters, you know, starting this big, all the way up to this big, and it's all finished. It's taken a month to do this, and the director comes and goes, oh, I was really thinking something more like this.
Oh my God!
It's like, you're kidding me. And you know, we're supposed to hit these. You know, you have to do this many feet a week. You know, much film footage. You're just like, there's no way. But if it was digital, you'd be like, oh, no problem. We'll just swing the camera over.
Done. Hit save. That's hilarious. Deepak, hi Jason. I have one question. While doing face on lip sync, is it good to take a video reference or is it better to use a mirror? I've been recently using video reference for lip sync because when you're using it in a mirror, you're sort of going in slow motion, but you're not actually doing it in sync with the audio file. So I've actually found that, you know, you learn the line, learn it verbatim, like so backwards and forwards, upside down, backwards, everything, and then actually say it in time with the character, but over-enunciate it, okay? So if the line is... to take video reference is a better, you know. So, like learn that line, like, the exact same speed as the character, and then go, to take video reference is a better. And then, record it so that you see the exact shapes that your mouth is actually making, so you know what shapes you're going to hit. And then you can sort of push them for the actual character. So, like, if the character is something like that redback character, it, obviously, like, the mouth shapes are going to be a little bit different, but at least you'll know which shapes are going to be most prominent to use rather than sort of doing it in slow motion and going, reference, you know, because it's not going to give you, a good depiction of what the mouth shape should be, you know. But by actually doing it in sync with the audio file, then you can see it frame by frame, you know. So I would absolutely do the use video reference for that. All right, Deepak? Cool, man. So we're going to start this May 6th, and then we're going to try and get, like, your curriculum. And maybe we'll give the curriculum to Larry so he can post it up. So,
sure.
You know, anybody who wants to learn how to do these things, this would be the course, and this would be, we'll do it on a certain day every week. You know, we'll have, like, 2-hour demos and 1-hour Q&A per week. And then, like, we'll see how that goes, and then you can have you know, review sessions near the end where they make their own props and stuff.
That's good.
With that. I'm super excited about this. I think it's going to be a fantastic addition to the iAnimate workshops. I think this is going to be something that I've always wanted to be able to do. So
it demystifies it, you know.
Yeah.
Before I started modeling, and just how do they do it? I can't figure it out. And, you know, even when I took... I had some online demos and things like that. I couldn't talk to the person and go, well, what about when this happens? And I may not have every answer, but I can find that answer out.
Right.
Or, you know, if there's something really complex or something that goes funky, the next time we get together, I'll make sure I've got that answer.
Right. Right.
But for the most part, I know where the buttons are. I know different techniques that you can use. I even use, you know, there's deformer tools that are used in animation that you can actually bring over and use to deform your model as you're sculpting it. So we use methods...
Richards, yeah, definitely sounds like a good course for any animator to add to the background, for sure. Deepak, is it good to mention the knowledge of some modeling, rigging, and texturing in a resume when applying for big studios like Disney or DreamWorks? Absolutely. I mean, any sort of experience that you have in animation, like, I mean, the broad scope of actually animating, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, having hired a lot of people, I've got five people working for me right now. And you look at someone that's a potential hire, and you go, well, that's their focus, that's great, what else can they do? Oh, this person's great at this, but look, they also know this, this, and this. Well, that's a little added bonus, isn't it? And that's the way that I would look at it. You don't want to be, as a professional animator or artist, you don't want to be a one-trick pony.
Right.
I don't do everything well, don't get me wrong. Right. But having a broad knowledge, as I said before, with a deep knowledge, a broad basis of knowledge, but with a deep knowledge of two or three things, makes you more marketable.
Right.
And frankly, there's going to come a day where you might get tired of doing one thing, and then you get to do the other that you already know a little bit about, and focus on that for a while. So it's also personally fulfilling, in my opinion, as well.
I mean, that's the one thing that I would definitely say, is that it does make you more marketable. I mean, you're not putting it down there saying that you want to be hired as a modeler or a rigger or a texturer, and you want to be hired as an animator. But like, just knowing those types of things means that you can actually have conversations with modelers about things that you may want in your shot, or special rigging things that you want in your shot. You know, that type of stuff is priceless, you know. Paul, just to add, I know in games and small studios, having some broader knowledge is invaluable. Thank you, Paul. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the smaller studios, you really do, they do want
they can't afford, 300 people, 400 people, right. like a large corporation can. Maybe they can only have 20 people. So
they want
maybe. Yeah, you're working on something, they go, sorry, we're out of animation next week. We have some modeling. Oh, great. I am in. I'll help you with that.
Sure.
So that's definitely true.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. Chris, Jason, this will be my final class with you before finishing the feature program. And I truly can't thank you enough for the past 2 years. The difference between my work when I graduated from college and now is night and day. I couldn't have done it without you. Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it, mate. And, it's a testament to your work, really. I mean, because, this course is sort of like, I don't know, it's sort of like working out. Like, if you don't, people can tell you, well, you need to do this, you need to be on a diet, if you're not going to follow this regimen, then you're not going to get anything out of it. And same thing with animation. It's sort of like, you got to animate if you want to get something out of it.
That's
and
right.
These guys, animate their tails off. And it's super inspiring for me to see the amount of work that they're doing. And it just makes me fall in love with animation again and again and again. So it's really cool. Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate that, mate. Richard, I am out of questions for tonight, but thank you for answering all of the questions. Good man, Richard. All right. Jason, will there be more Team Ultimate webisodes? I would love to participate in the next one. Thank you. Yes. Over the next 3 weeks in the break, I'm going to be cutting together the animatic for that next Team Ultimate 3. And I'm going to be doing about 3 or 4 shots on that. I've already done 2, but 3 or 4 more shots. And then I'll break up the rest of it and do the Maya animatic for it. And then starting the first week in the next block, we'll start that as well. Okay? Karna, hey, Jason, I'm in Workshop 4 now, and I'll be taking a break. I just want to say thank you for all the awesome tutorials. I'll be back soon. Awesome, Karna. Thank you so much again. And come back soon. So you're always welcome. And of course, just let me know when you want to come back in, because all current students or past students get the first pick of their places. All right, so just let me know ahead of time, and we'll get you reserved in there. Okay, good man, Karna. Take care of yourself. Yes, so starting May 6th, we'll be starting Team Ultimate 3, and we'll start to dish out the shots then. I know a lot of people have asked me, and that they want to be part of it. So once we get the shot breakdown up there, then we'll pass it on, and then you guys can sign up for your shots, okay? But I think Jorge did an awesome job directing his own Team Ultimate webisodes, which was awesome, Team Ultimate 2. And I can't wait to finish that one off, and then we'll get that one, try and get it rendered. Ibrahima says, thanks, Jason, for another great block. You are very welcome, mate. Absolutely. And I can't wait to start the next one. It's always like, the these blocks just go in so fast, you know, and then like you have like this 3 or 4 weeks of like sort of, I don't know, like dead time, if you will, you know, because you haven't really kind of been in contact with the students and everything, that I'm always dying to get back into the next block because it's so inspiring to see like the amount of work that's being done, you know.
I have to tell you, that for me, I love teaching. And that is so rewarding when I see someone else getting to the point where they can do it. I've had so many, I cannot tell you how many people I ran into, went to the Creative Talent Network.
Yeah, the show.
That are Pixar animators that were under me years ago. I remember, there must have been a dozen people who were just getting started back at Pixar years ago. And were like, Larry, you help me with my test? And I was like, just happened to be there at the time. And to see people progress and move on, that's really rewarding.
Well, even Tim Ingersoll and Jim Vandekamp, they used to be your assistants, right, in 2D.
At Bear Animation.
That's right.
They can outdraw me any day. They made my animation look good. They'll laugh.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome, though.
Tim and Jim.
I'd say they were characters back then, even, were they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's fun. All right, guys. Any more questions? Every time I try to say goodbye, like, there's another question pop up. All right, guys. All right, we're going to call it, okay? Because I want to have a conversation with Larry anyway. Thanks, Larry, for the info. Thanks a lot, Jason. See you soon in the next workshop. All right, Deepak. All right, guys. Take care of yourselves. Have a great break. Please do keep animating, right? Don't just give up, like, over the next 4 weeks. Please do keep animating because, you know, every animation test that you do, you're always going to get that bit more better, you know. And you're never going to go backwards, right, unless you give up. That's when you go backwards, you know, right? So okay, guys, have a great one, and take care of yourselves, and we'll see you May 6th for the next block, all right? Bye.